south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
So then, am I losing it? You be the judge. I just was made aware at the very start of the last show I did. I said, let's start out with an interesting email, and I never got to that email. Did the whole show, no email. So, here's that email. Starts out, hey Johnny, in January 2022, I took my wife on the tourist trail of Guatemala. This year, we're doing the same in El Salvador. Both times, we paid for the trip, and then you announce your seminar. Next time, please consult me first. Ha ha. And now, I'm feeling much more at home there, in Guatemala. Here's my conundrum. Lake Atitlan has the weather I want for sure. He's talking about Lake Atitlan, the most beautiful lake in the world, or second most beautiful. Some say it's Lake Como in Italy. Anyway, he says, and El Salvador is hot as balls right now. However, the people in El Salvador just love President Bukele. You can't help but notice. And whoever heard of a president with an 89% approval rating? That's unheard of. By the way, we just had two pupusas there and two supremas for only $5.50. One more thing, Johnny. In Salvador, they love Bitcoin and Bitcoin remises. Plus, the process is unbelievably easy. Then he says, El Salvador has a strange history. The history of the guerrilla fighters against the suppressive government is unbelievable. In fact, I'm having drinks with a former guerrilla guy tomorrow. How about that? Everyone in Salvador loves the place now. I just walked around town at 9 p.m. and didn't feel scared at all. The pros of El Salvador, to me, are starting to outweigh the pros of Guatemala for me. I'm curious to know your thoughts and experiences on that. Signed, Mr. C from Philly. P.S., he says, quit being so hard on people masking. Although I agree they really suck and don't work, they do help screw up facial recognition cameras. And what's not to like about that? Then he's got a second P.S. He says, I really think that if Bitcoin is gold, Monero is silver to Bitcoin's gold, and everything else, like you said, is shitcoins. And he's still not done. He's got a PSSS. He says, Johnny, my wife won't let me come to your seminar alone. It's something she's been hearing about the Gringo Advantage and all the lovely available Latinas there. She's got a point. She's no dummy. All right, Mr. C, let's talk a little bit more about Guatemala and El Salvador. Did you know that until President Bukele in El Salvador came in and wiped out the gangs and instituted the Bitcoin standard, a very high percentage of Salvadorians in the States, and let's face it, most of them were illegals. I think there's something like 3 million Salvadoranos in the United States now. Anyway, I heard this personally from Salvadoranos. They said they would pretend to be Mexican when they were up in the States, when asked. And why would they do that, you might ask? Why would they not admit they're from the country they were born in? Well, out of shame and embarrassment for Salvador's worldwide reputation as the crime, gang, and murder capital of Latin America. You have to wonder if you were in their shoes, would you have done the same thing? Maybe. And now, just about 2 years into the new administration, there's been a huge boost in local pride and nationalism. For once in their history, and perhaps the only time, suddenly, they're a huge international success story. In fact, Salvadorians in the States are having such renewed pride in their country, they're returning in big numbers. I'm talking about the ones that managed to get ahead in the States anyway, not the ones that are just scratching by. Up in the States, the poor, sweaty masses still working for cash illegally. They're not going back to Salvador anytime soon. But the ones that have got residency, green cards, and steady jobs, almost everyone that's interviewed, I'm the States I'm talking about now, says once they get a big enough nest egg, they're going back to El Salvador to live out the rest of their lives. By the way, did you know the whole gang problem that's associated with El Salvador was entirely due to bad U.S. policy? It was the U.S. and the CIA that funded that terrible war in the 1970s and 80s, where half the population lost everything and so 2 or 3 million left for the U.S. No skills, no money, no job, no papers, no English. So the young men who mostly went to Los Angeles, they entered gangs, got all tatted up, got caught, ended up in prison. And with California prisons just loaded with these guys, Clinton came in and ordered them all deported, sent back to Salvador. Those hardened guys got even more hardened in California prisons. So those terrible gangs you hear about, the Salvatruchas and the MS-14, they didn't originate in El Salvador. They originated in California, mostly in the prisons up there. Then, as they got deported back, soon enough, 30% of the Salvador economy was extortion-based. It became the most dangerous country in Latin America by far. And then, 2 years ago, President Bukele came in. And to clean house, he had to change some laws, temporarily anyway. The end result was 50 to 60,000 gangbangers put in prison. And now, surprise, surprise, it's the safest country in Latin America. By the way, other Latin countries are lobbying to co-opt Bukele's ideas. They can't believe he actually did it. Now they want a piece of that. Because for something like 30 to 50 years now, every single politician in Latin America, all 20 countries, has been promising action and reform against criminals. Until Bukele got in, it was all just hot air. Meanwhile, gang leaders that weren't imprisoned are fleeing the country in droves and being caught in countries as far away as Mexico, Argentina, and Chile. As if they're not easy to spot. How do you hide those forehead and neck tattoos without making an extreme fashion statement? They're escaping because they know they can no longer operate in Salvador, so they run. Imagine that, a bunch of gangbangers so afraid of the president, they don't hunker down and fight it out like they do in Mexico, but they get the hell out of the country. By the way, Mexican authorities are reporting every day in the news they're capturing fleeing Salvadorian gangbangers, along with their families and other gangbanger members too. Of course, they're not sticking around. They're running to avoid capture under El Salvador's special emergency powers. Can you guess where 90% of them are going? At least the ones who don't get caught. They're crossing through Mexico on their way to the USA, where they know illegals, even murderous gangbangers, have, quote, immigrant rights. Meanwhile, the do-gooders in Salvador, courtesy of all those U.S. NGOs, that's where all that noise comes from. They complain about the rights of 60,000 gang members. But no one ever stuck up for the rights of the 6 million good people in El Salvador who were victims of all that extortion. No one except Bukele. You know, it seems in the U.S. there are unlimited numbers of do-gooders that'll shout, whine, and picket for these guys as long as they don't move to their neighborhood. Isn't that funny? Now, as for my opinion, take it or leave it, I say Mexico should just calm down a bit. They shouldn't arrest those fleeing gangbangers. They should just give them a few days. They'll cross over to the States and guess what? Problem solved. But for who? Anyway, as Bukele cleans up El Salvador and the other Latin American countries just salivating to do the same, the tattooed psychopaths are heading north, compliments of Uncle Joe. So don't worry, all you bleeding hearts out there. They are coming to a neighborhood near you. That is, if they ain't there already. Oh, and here's another interesting fact. Extorting local transportation like buses and taxis has been a key line of revenue for gangs in El Salvador. And now, for the first time in probably 20 or 30 years, that's not an issue. Now, just last month, Bukele's transportation minister estimated the companies had stopped paying some $50 million in extortion to gangs just in 2022. And all that money goes back into the real economy. That's real purchasing power. Meanwhile, the do-gooders and wokesters in the States are appalled at the human rights violations. They estimate about 5% of the 60,000 people that were thrown in jail were locked up without cause. Doesn't matter, they had gang tats on their necks and faces. I guess those do-gooders are figuring regular people get gang tattoos too because, well, they're all the rage, right? Or perhaps some goody-two-shoes folks got gang tats by mistake. You know, they came in hoping to get a flower, a heart, or a cute little bumblebee, and the tattoo artist got his wires crossed. Honest mistake. Happens all the time. Oh, and there's some more late-breaking news about Salvador. You know, their $800 million bond issue was set to mature on Tuesday. It's been repaid with interest. So, big deal, you might say. Why is that making the headlines? Well, the thing is, the fact that it got repaid on time didn't make the news. Every country's got bond issues, and they're always coming up for repayment, and they get repaid, right? Most of the time, anyway. When it happens with other countries, there's not a single line in the news. It isn't news. Well, here's the real kicker. In a news conference on Tuesday, Bukele said, quote, "It's hard to believe, but in the past year, almost every legacy international news outlet, that's mainstream media, said that because of our so-called Bitcoin bet, we were going to default on our debt by January 2023, since we had an $800 million bond maturing on Tuesday. President Bukele says, we've cataloged literally hundreds of these articles in the mainstream press, all of them betting and snickering that we were going to default. He went on to say he and his staff were only able to find one article out of hundreds from a Colombian paper this time that published the news of the repayment that was on time. That's right. They were hoping and snickering and predicting we were going to default. And when we didn't, only one news service, a Colombian newspaper, reported on it. Seems it was a big disappointment to the World Bank, the IMF, and the big banking associations. We were supposed to default, according to them, and we didn't. Furthermore, he said, all the mainstream news services said we'd have to strike a deal with the IMF to pay off our debt. The only way, they said, to avoid default. Wait a minute. Is it default or default? Tomato or tomato? Shit or shite? Back in Chicago, I had a Scottish cleaning lady who was fond of the latter. And then, get this, Bukele said in a tweet, if you don't believe we paid it off on time, I'll show you the receipts. Meanwhile, the U.S. government is in debt to the tune of $38 trillion, and Congress is deadlocked as they hit the debt ceiling once again. Not to worry, though, you've got Braindead Joe in charge. Do you ever listen to the guy talk? He's about as deep as a birdbath. Speaking of having a plan B, you know, down here in Latin America, you still hear a lot of people, I'm talking about Latinos now, talking about the so-called American dream. Now, I know if you're living up in the States, you almost never hear that phrase anymore. So really, there's a wide divide between fantasy and reality concerning the so-called American dream. We all know the American dream has been fading away for a long time. If it did exist, why would you want a plan B? You wouldn't need one. Speaking of getting a massive leg up on your plan B, remember, my next expat insider seminar will be in Guatemala and El Salvador on March 17th through 24th. And if you sign up by February 1st, you get a $500 discount off the regular price. Just go to expatplanb.com for all the info and sign-up details. But back to this American dream thing. Here's the thing, and I don't think too many people have thought about it. If you have an internet connection and a cell phone, you can have a sort of a version of the American dream any place on earth. Because, you know, having good job opportunities was really part of the American dream, right? That's why so many people came to the States. And if you ask any immigrant or illegal, most will tell you the same thing. They came for the job opportunities. Let's for a moment not talk about the freebies and the welfare and all that. What I'm saying is these days there's a sort of a version of the American dream if you just have a cell phone and an internet connection. Because once you set up a little business online, you can make money from anywhere. It can flow in via PayPal, a bank account. You could take and spend your earnings in crypto. And in most cases on the front end, it costs almost nothing compared to opening up a brick and mortar business. So then suppose you're in a third world country, you've got an online business that's bringing in some money. Well, you want to live well, like a first world person, right? That's also part of the so-called American dream, to live well. That means if you live in the third world, leaving the farm or getting the hell out of the barrio, moving on up. And the American dream also means eating well, having good food, also having safe, hygienic living quarters, and having the convenience of a wide variety of stuff you can buy. Well, these days, you no longer have to live in the U.S. to have all that. Every third world country has its first world style neighborhoods, business districts, and residential areas. They have all the things you'll find up in the first world. There's absolutely nothing you can't get in a third world big city these days. Even the real oddball stuff, you can order it from Amazon or get it online somewhere. In fact, just this morning, I was walking around in a residential area, a high-end area, and I was looking at a parking lot adjacent to a residential tower. Not because I like staring at parking lots. There was just something weird about that lot. And I saw a guy out there working on a 1956 Cadillac convertible. First thing I thought was, cool hobby. Second thought was, man, we're deep in the heart of Latin America. How's he get parts for that? So I walked up to the guy and asked him how close he was to having it completely restored. He said about 98% done. He also told me that just 3 or 4 years ago, it would have been almost impossible for him to get certain parts for their car, but now he can get everything. All the little gaskets, grommets, push buttons, chrome. He just orders it online and gets it delivered to his mailbox in Miami, and it's transferred right to his doorstep in about a week and a half. He said just 5 years ago, you'd have to fly to Miami yourself, locate the stuff, then fly back. That could take 3 days to a week. He said it was just an impossibility to have a hobby like that unless you were filthy rich and had all the time in the world. The point I'm making is that the American dream, though no longer technically available in the United States any longer, however, it is still available in some form or another if you've got a smartphone and an internet connection, no matter where you are in the world. Of course, you'll have to have a little drive, an idea or two, and some imagination. Then again, lots of boneheaded, mental, midget, moron influencers are making millions on Dickcock. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like us gringos and expats are looking for the American dream. We already had our version of it, right? I'm just mentioning this because there seems to be a disconnect in the brains of Latin Americans versus what's really happening up in the United States. Latin Americans, Asians, Africans, and other foreigners still think there is such thing as the American dream. And the poorer they are, the more they're convinced of it. It seems no amount of evidence will dissuade them either. That's why, oftentimes when us gringos and expats are asked by someone down here in Latin America, let's say, why did you leave the United States? When we tell them it's broken, it's fallen apart and can't be fixed, they just nod, their eyes glaze over, and they give you kind of a stupid grin. You lost them before you even got 10 words out of your mouth. It's sort of a fantasy that's hardwired into the brains of most all Latin Americans. The US of A, the land of milk and honey, the American dream. There's no use using logic, no use trying to talk them out of it. It's like trying to talk a true follower out of his belief in astrology. It's never going to happen. All right, here's something that might concern you. In 2022, through the second week of January, the Ministry of Health of Ecuador reports 97 violent attacks in hospitals and healthcare clinics. In other words, 97 times someone went into a hospital or clinic to try to kill someone. I'm thinking, shouldn't that best be left to the doctors? Anyway, this article says, most are raids by armed individuals attempting to kill patients wounded in earlier confrontations that day. It says, according to police, almost all of the attackers and targets are members of drug gangs, with attackers attempting to finish off their victims at the hospital or clinic. Though it also says that some of the attacks are not aimed at patients. In a number of cases, hospital personnel have been victims of robbery attempts by armed individuals. Meanwhile, most expats, gringos, and retirement rags like International Living talk about how you will love living the peaceful life in Ecuador. They don't tell you, though, there were 4,439 murders in 2022. The fact that Ecuador has a population 1/18 of the U.S., you multiply those 4,439 murders by 18 and you'll see Ecuador is much more dangerous than the U.S. That would equate to over 80,000 homicides in the U.S., more than double the present rate there. So it's buyer beware. Now, as for me, I was never big on Ecuador myself. You longtime listeners know that. Nice place to visit, wouldn't want to live there. And that goes for another country I don't recommend, Peru. Since they threw their last president in the slammer after he tried to dissolve Congress and change the constitution and rule by edict. Well, since then, there have been 6 weeks of unrest, massive protests, clashes with the police that have resulted in 60 dead and 600 people in the hospital. Now, that might not sound like much to you. Typical weekend in Chicago, right? But get this. Peru's number one tourist attraction has just been shut down. Machu Picchu, you heard of it. It's their biggest international draw and moneymaker, and when a country has to shut down its number one milk cow, you know things are serious and way out of hand. It turns out protesters have damaged the tracks of the train that leads back to Cusco, so hundreds of tourists have been stranded. Naturally, protesters would strike at the number one tourist spot. Machu Picchu has been the site of some of the most intense clashes since the protests began 6 weeks ago. They know all too well that's one way to get the government's attention real fast. So anyway, as of just 2 days ago, the government officials are saying that 417 foreigners are stuck at Machu Picchu amid riots, and they had to call on the government to get them evacuated to the closest city. So again, that just sort of reinforces my position on Peru. Nice place to visit, wouldn't want to live there. And believe me, I've been there a number of times. I've been to almost every single Latin American country, I think, except Guyana. Or was it Suriname? You know, most people can't find those on the map. Then again, about 98% of Americans couldn't find Ukraine on the map before the war broke out and probably still can't. Here's a question for you. Are you a smoker? I mean, cigarettes or cigars. Well, are you aware of the fact that Mexico now bans smoking in all public places? That includes hotels, beaches, parks, and other public spaces. We're talking about outdoors now. Outdoors. Are you getting this? You can no longer smoke a cigarette at the beach. Not that I'm a cigarette smoker. I think I've smoked maybe 5 in my whole life. But once every couple of weeks, I'll smoke a stogie. You know, a habano, a puro, they're called down here. Puro. Puro meaning pure. Pure what? I don't know. But that's what they call them. Puros or habanos, meaning Havana, right? Habano. But they call cigarettes cigarros. How do you like that? Cigarros. Confusing, huh? Very counterintuitive, even ass backwards, if you ask me. Anyway, Mexico has passed what they call the General Law for Tobacco Control Reform, which took effect on Sunday, last Sunday. It also prohibits businesses from promoting, advertising, or sponsoring tobacco products in any way, including putting them on display for sale. So, in effect, the law expands the 2008 ban on smoking in bars, restaurants, and workplaces. That's the case in most of all Latin America. You can't smoke in bars, restaurants, or workplaces. I guess that's the same in the States. In Mexico, by the way, those restrictions include e-cigarettes and vaping. Now, according to the corrupt organization WHO, only Ireland, Greece, Hungary, and Malta have such strict public bannings in place. More to come, though, you can bet. Now, of course, Mexico's got lots of smokers. It's claimed that about 10% of Mexicans smoke. Maybe not every day. Some people only smoke when they're drinking, which means every night. So, in effect, the only place left to smoke in Mexico is in your own house. The question is, will the people resist? Can it be enforced at all? Now, I have to tell you, back in 2008 through 2010, when most all of the anti-smoking laws were passed in Latin America, where you couldn't smoke in bars, restaurants, etc., I remember sitting in a bar during a break. My band was playing there, and all of us band members, I was the only gringo, obviously, they were laughing at the thought that they could enforce such a law in a bar. And those guys were smoking away even 6 or 7 months after the law was passed. And the owner of the bar, his name was Holger. German guy, he was smoking his ass off too, in his own bar. And back then, we were all saying, look, they can't even enforce the traffic laws. People run red lights and stop lights all the time, go the wrong way down one-way streets, make illegal U-turns, have burnt-out headlights at night. We were all thinking enforcement of any kind of smoking ban would be a joke. But in the end, we were wrong. Little by little, people started to comply. And it first started in big malls and restaurants. You'd see people lighten up and the rent-a-cop would walk over and tell you to put it out. So compliance snowballed. It took a couple of years for enforcement to take effect. But even back then, in the early days, I hadn't seen any real confrontations. People would just snuff it out and go outside. But now in Mexico, you can't even do that anymore. Does seem weird, doesn't it? And I suppose sooner or later, that wave will wash over many Latin American countries and the States and Europe too. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but Europeans smoke their asses off. Eastern Europeans, Italians, Spaniards, and French, especially. Of course, Russians and Ukrainians smoke their asses off too, but even with Europe's very strict smoking rules, that doesn't seem to have put a dent in the habit. Even though there are photos of cancerous lungs and such on Marlboro boxes. Yeah, it must be a law there. Cigarette boxes show cancer victims. It really is a shocker. It's nasty. So again, the question is, can they enforce the outdoor rule, no smoking, in Mexico? I don't know. Try telling a smoker with a gang tattoo on his face that he can't smoke in the park. I wonder how that'll go down. All right, you know, on last week's show, we were talking about the terrible maintenance issues in Latin America. Case in point, the brand new tram in Ecuador. First world technology, too, made in France, but after 2 years, no replacement parts, no maintenance. Now, you might remember just about a month ago, well, maybe you don't because maybe the news didn't get to you, but on January 7th, there was a subway train collision in Mexico City that killed a few and injured 59, sent them to the hospital. Well, the number's up to 106 injured now, according to El País, that's a Spanish language news service. Anyway, if you heard the report at all, you'll remember the crash pinned 4 passengers in the wreckage, including one of the conductors who later died. Well, they've been investigating, and the initial reports said that the conductors or drivers of the Metro faced scrutiny by endangering others because they were on their phones and chatting away on WhatsApp at the time. There are multiple witnesses that say they saw the conductors on their social media at the time. But the train operators said under oath they use their social media apps like WhatsApp because they're essential to the safe operation of the Metro system. Sounds lame, I know, but they're saying the Metro system's communication system is not working. They say the radios provided have been failing for years. In fact, for years now, drivers have said that the Metro system's faulty automatic pilot programming has forced conductors to operate many of the trains 100% manually. To do that, they need to be in close voice or text contact to avoid collisions. And the workers say trains' radio-based communication system is not working. So instead, they have to use their own smartphones to communicate with each other and WhatsApp chats to coordinate with the control center. Even though cell phones and apps are considered distracting materials and technically prohibited. Nevertheless, everyone uses them because they're considered essential. In fact, one conductor said, quote, "We are often reported by our supervisors for being on our cell phones, even though we now come to depend on them." Meanwhile, according to Mexico City Metro technicians, the subway is one of the cheapest in the world, 5 pesos, about 25 cents a ride. And the earnings from the current passenger load and budget only covers operative costs. And it's been estimated they'd have to double the price to 50 cents per ride or 10 pesos to cover maintenance costs. So basically, there's no maintenance. And they come right out and tell you. In fact, one Metro engineer who didn't want to be identified said, "It's absurd when you see videos from the control center with post-it notes glued up everywhere. Because of a burnt-out communication cable that's never been replaced. We've gone from fiber optics to pen and paper." So, in effect, the clock was ticking on the system's second most deadly accident on record, which occurred in May 2021, just 2 years ago, when an elevated railway collapsed, killing 26 people and leaving hundreds injured. Now, normally, the trains run at about 70 kilometers an hour. That's about 40 miles an hour. And the autopilot knows when to reduce the speed to 35 kilometers an hour, half of that, to avoid derailment. But, he said, unfortunately, the autopilot system has not been working lately. Which is why, he said, the trains are increasingly manually driven, with real-time communications among operators via WhatsApp. Now, digging deeper into this, investigators found out there was a WhatsApp chat group with 160 members, specifically to warn each other about autopilot outages and other malfunctions on their lines. The anonymous engineer reporting all this says if there's ever a WhatsApp outage, the workers have a parallel Facebook chat to maintain communication. As a result, according to pilots, about 98% of the train operators use WhatsApp on the job. If I had my druthers, I'd never ride the Mexican Metro. Druthers, there's a word. I never did know what druthers were. I bet you don't either.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.